White letters on a black background. Steven Spielberg presents a Robert Zemeckis film. Saturday, November the 12th, 1955, 10:03 p.m. Lightning flashes above a clock tower. On a ledge beneath the clock face sits Doc Brown, a man with white wispy hair. He looks up the street and sees a DeLorean DMC speed towards the tower, driven by teenager Marty McFly. Doc slides down a wire strung across the street and falls to the ground. Doc clings onto one end of the wire and runs as the clock ticks round to 10:04. A bolt of lightning strikes the clock tower. The wire lights up blue. Doc connects his wire to a mains and is knocked back as the DMC is struck by lightning and disappears. Doc stares in awe at the crackling static on the wire across the street. He picks himself up slowly, wide-eyed and gawping, and looks up at the sizzling clock tower. He staggers towards the flaming tire tracks in the road, staring around in amazement. He breaks into a triumphant run. Doc stares up into the sky with an ecstatic, absent-minded grin on his face. Marty rounds the corner at full pelt and runs up to him.
Doc!
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 Marty spins Doc round.
Please, Marty!
Oh, Cap, just sent you back to the future.
Yeah. Oh, I know you did send me back to the future, but I'm back. I'm back from the future.
Doc faints. Back to the Future, Part 3. Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Mary Steenburgen. An old mansion with lights in several windows. The number outside reads 1640. A sedan rolls smoothly up the drive and stops. Lightning flashes in the sky above the mansion. Marty clambers out of the sedan and lugs the unconscious Doc over his shoulder and up the steps to a set of French windows. He opens them and goes inside. The cast list continues. Thomas F. Wilson, Matt Clark, Richard Dysart, Pat Buttram, Harry Carey Jr., Dub Taylor, James Tolkien, Mark McClure, Wendy Jo Sperber, and Leah Thompson. Doubleback written and performed by ZZ Top. Old photographs in frames line a wall of the Doc's cluttered living room. Marty is asleep on an armchair, his bare feet resting on a skateboard. By the skateboard, a wire-haired terrier lies on the floor. Across from Marty, deep in slumber on a sofa, and also with bare feet, lies white-haired Doc Brown. Directed by Robert Zemeckis. A television set crackles behind Doc. There's nothing but static on its screen. It bursts into life.
What time is it?
Doc sits up. He rises, puts on a dressing gown, inadvertently kicks the skateboard, then rushes over to the TV. He switches it off, then picks up a mic from a recording machine.
November 13th, 1955, 7:01 a.m. Last night's time travel experiment was apparently a complete success. Lightning struck the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m., sending the necessary 1.21 gigawatts into the time vehicle, which vanished in a brilliant flash of light, leaving a pair of fire trails behind. I therefore assume that Marty and the time vehicle were transported forward through time into the year 1985. After that, I can't recall what happened. In fact, I don't even remember how I got home. Perhaps the gigawatt discharge, coupled with the temporal displacement field generated by the time vehicle, caused a disruption of my own brainwaves, resulting in a condition of momentary amnesia. Indeed, I now recall that moments after the time vehicle disappeared into the future, I saw a vision of Marty say he had come back from the future.
Hey, Doc.
Undoubtedly, this was some sort of exotic image.
Marty's awake. Doc treads on the skateboard and falls back onto a keyboard of the organ behind him.
Calm down, okay? Just calm down. It's me. It's Marty.
No, it can't be you. I sent you back to the future.
Hey, Doc, that's right, but I came back again. I came back from the future. Don't you remember last night? You fainted. I brought you home.
This can't be happening. You can't be here. It doesn't make sense for you to be here. I refuse to believe that you are here.
Doc, I am here, and it does make sense. Look, I came back to 1955 again with you, the you from 1985, because we had to get a book from Biff. So once I got a book back, you, that is the you from 1985, we're in the DeLorean, and it got struck by lightning, and you got sent back to 1885.
1885! It's a very interesting story, future boy, but there's just one little thing that doesn't make sense. If the me of the future is now in the past, how could you possibly know about it?
You sent me a letter.
Dear Marty, my calculations are correct. You'll receive this letter immediately after you saw the DeLorean struck by lightning. First, let me assure you that I am alive and well. I've been living happily these past 8 months in the year 1885. The lightning bolt that hit the DeLorean caused a gigawatt overload, which scrambled the time circuits, activated the flux capacitor, and sent me back to 1885. The overload shorted out the time circuits and destroyed the flying circuits. Unfortunately, the car will never fly again. It actually flew.
Yeah, well, you had a hover conversion done in the early 21st century.
Incredible. I set myself up as a blacksmith as a front while I attempted to repair the damage to the time circuits. Unfortunately, this proved impossible because suitable replacement parts will not be invented until 1947. However, I've gotten quite adept at shoeing horses and fixing wagons. 1885. Amazing. I actually end up as a blacksmith in the Old West.
Pretty heavy, huh?
I have buried the DeLorean in the abandoned Delgado mine adjacent to the old Boot Hill Cemetery as shown on the enclosed map. Hopefully it should remain undisturbed and preserved until you uncover it in 1955. Inside, you will find repair instructions. My 1955 counterpart, that's me, should have no problem repairing it so that you can drive it back to the future. Once you have returned to 1985, destroy the time machine. Destroy it?
Yeah, well, it's a long story, Doc.
Do not. I repeat, do not attempt to come back here to get me. I am perfectly happy living in the fresh air and wide open spaces, and I fear that unnecessary time travel only risks further disruption of the space-time continuum. And please take care of Einstein for me. Einstein?
He's your dog, Doc. Einstein, it's what you call your dog in 1985.
I know you will give him a good home. Remember to walk him twice a day and that he only likes canned dog food. These are my wishes. Please respect them and follow them. And so, Marty, I now say farewell and wish you Godspeed. You've been a good, kind, and loyal friend to me, and you've made a real difference in my life. I will always treasure our relationship and think on you with fond memories, warm feelings, and a special place in my heart. Your friend in time, Doc Emmett L. Brown, September 1st, 1885. I never knew I could write anything so touching.
I know, Doc, it's beautiful.
The Wirehaired Terrier.
Copernicus, everything's gonna be fine.
I'm sorry, Doc, it's all my fault you're stuck back there. I never should have let Biff get to me.
Well, there are plenty worse places to be than the Old West. I could have ended up in the Dark Ages. They probably would have burned me at a stake as a heretic or something. Let's look at the map. All right, according to this, the time vehicle sealed off in a side tunnel. We may have to blast.
Marty and Doc shelter behind a gravestone as debris and timber are blown out of the mine entrance. Marty gets to his feet.
I think you woke up the dead with that blast.
Take this camera. I'm going to document everything.
Copernicus wears a torch helmet.
I attempted to reach the center of the Earth. I've been reading my favorite author, Jules Verne. I spent weeks preparing that expedition. I didn't even get this far. Of course, I was only 12 at the time. You know, it was the writings of Jules Verne that had a profound effect on my life. It was when I was 11 that I first read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And then I realized that I must devote my life to science.
Doc, check it out. Look at this.
Marty shines his torch on a piece of wood.
My initials! Just like in Journey to the Center of the Earth! That means the time machine must be right through this wall!
Using picks, Marty and Doc lever off the piece of timber with his initials and an arrow etched into it and attack the wall of rubble behind it. When the hole is big enough, they shine their torches through and see an object under a cover.
It's been buried here for 70 years, 2 months and 13 days. Astounding!
As you can see, the lightning bolt shorted out the time circuit control microchip.
Doc examines it.
Schematic diagram will allow you to build a replacement unit with 1955 components, thus restoring the time machine to perfect working order.
Unbelievable that this little piece of junk could be such a big problem.
Doc studies it through a magnifying glass.
This circuit failed. It says made in Japan.
What do you mean, Doc? All the best stuff is made in Japan.
Doc jacks up the car.
You know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a cowboy. And now, knowing I'm going to spend my future in the past, sounds like a wonderful way to spend my retirement years. It just occurred to me, Marty, since I end up in 1885, perhaps I'm now in the history books. I wonder, could I go to the library and look myself up in the old newspaper archives?
I don't know, Doc. You're the one that's always saying, you know, it's not good to know too much about your own destiny.
You're right, Marty. I know too much already. Better that I not attempt to uncover the circumstances of my own future. Copernicus! Come on, boy!
I'll get him, Doc. Copernicus! Copernicus, come on, let's go home, boy. What's wrong? What's wrong, Copernicus? Come on.
He's by a gravestone.
Come on.
Marty shines his torch on the gravestone. Here lies Emmett Brown.
Doc! Come here! Quick!
What's wrong, Marty? You look like you've seen a ghost.
You're not far off, Doc.
Doc reads he died September the 7th, 1885.
Great Scott!
Check this out. Died September 7th, 1885. That's 1 week after you wrote the letter. Erected in eternal memory by his beloved Clara. Who the hell is Clara?
Marty, please don't stand there!
Oh, right. Sorry. I gotta get another picture.
Shot in the back by Buford Tannen over a matter of $80. What kind of a future do you call that?
Buford Tannen was a notorious gunman whose short temper and a tendency to drool earned him the nickname Mad Dog. He was quick on the trigger and bragged that he had killed 12 men. Not including Indians or Chinamen.
Doesn't mention me! Am I one of the 12?
Just a minute. However, this claim cannot be substantiated since precise records were not kept after Tannen shot a newspaper editor who printed an unfavorable story about him in 1884. That's why we can't find anything.
Look!
They're in the library.
The Bryan family. Your relatives?
My great-grandfather's name was William. That's him. Good-looking guy.
The flies! But no Browns.
Well, maybe it was a mistake, Doc. Maybe that grave wasn't yours. It could have been another Emmett Brown back in 1885.
No.
I don't know. Did you have any relatives here back then?
The Browns didn't come to Hill Valley until 1908, and then they were the Von Browns. My father changed our name during the First World War.
Doc, look.
A photograph of the new clock.
It's me. It is true. All of it. It is me who goes back there and gets shot.
It's not going to happen, Doc. After you fix the time circuits and put new tires on the DeLorean, I'm going back to 1885 and I'm bringing you home.
Day. Doc, a little trilby on his head, works on a clunky piece of machinery on top of the DeLorean's bonnet.
The clothes sit!
Yeah, everything except the boots, Doc. They're kind of tight. I don't know, you sure this stuff is authentic?
Of course! Haven't you ever seen a Western?
Yeah, I have, Doc. And Clint Eastwood never wore anything like this.
A shirt with a fringe.
That's right. You haven't heard of him yet.
Why? You have to wear the boots. You can't wear those futuristic things back in 1885. You shouldn't even be wearing them here in 1955.
All right, Doc, look, as soon as I get there, I'll put them on, I promise.
Okay. I think we're about ready. I put gas in the tank. Your future clothes are packed. Just in case, fresh batteries for your walkie-talkies. Oh, what about that floating device?
Hoverboard.
All right.
You know, Doc, it's going to be a hell of a long walk back to Hill Valley from here.
Still the safest plan. After all, we can't risk sending you back into a populated area or to a spot that's geographically unknown. You don't want to crash into some tree that once existed in the past. This is all a completely open country, so you'll have plenty of runout space when you arrive. Remember where you're going. There are no roads. And there's a small cave over there which will be a perfect place to hide the time vehicle. Well, the new time circuit control tubes are warmed up.
Doc lifts open the door.
Time circuit's on. I wrote the letter on September 1st, so we'll send you back the very next day, September 2nd. That's a Wednesday, September 2nd, 1885, 8 a.m. I get shot on Monday the 7th, so you have 5 days to locate me. According to my letter, I'm a blacksmith, so I probably have a shop somewhere. All you have to do is drive the time vehicle directly toward that screen, accelerating 88 miles an hour.
Wait a minute, Doc. If I drive straight towards the screen, I'm going to crash into those Indians.
Marty, you're not thinking fourth dimensionally. You'll instantly be transported to 1885, and those Indians won't even be there.
Right.
Well, good luck for both of our sakes. See you in the future.
You mean the past?
Exactly.
Marty places the photograph of Doc's gravestone into the upturned cowboy hat, climbs into the car, and reverses.
Hey, Marty!
They're at an empty drive-in movie arena.
Ready! Hit!
I owe Silver.
Hearing Doc's pistol, Marty puts his foot down and the DeLorean speeds past Doc. As he approaches the drive-in movie screen, the white-rimmed wheels of the car spark and bolts of blue light zap in front of the car. There are Redskins on horseback painted on a wall beneath the screen. Marty speeds towards them. Now he's driving towards the real thing. He reverses as the Indians gallop towards him. Their leader wears a feathered headdress. Marty reverses in an arc and gets ready to drive forward. The Indians charge at full pelt across the scrubland as Marty peers at them in his wing mirror. Behind the Indians, Redstone Mountains reach up to the blue sky. Marty comes to a steep incline. Marty careens down it. He slews to a stop. Spotting the cave, he reverses into it as the Indians ride over it and past him. Sitting in the semi-darkness, Marty watches through the windscreen as they gallop away. He clambers out of the DeLorean, wearing his red jeans, lilac shirt with a turquoise collar and shoulders and greenish fringe hanging from it, and a maroon bandana round his neck. He climbs the rocks surrounding the cave and spots the cavalry.
The cavalry!
He jumps back down and seeks refuge in the cave as the cavalry leap past. He staggers out of the cave and watches as the cavalry chase the Indians into the distance. Marty returns to the car and sees an arrow sticking out of its chassis. He removes it. He tosses the arrow away, picks up the photo of the gravestone and shuts the car's door. He listens for a moment, then looks around. Marty crouches down beside the car. Liquid pours from the underside. A grizzly bear. It rises.
Ah!
Wearing his trainers and carrying the boots, he skedaddles. The bear lumbers after him. Marty drops the boots. He turns as the bear reaches them and sticks its snout in one. Marty keeps running and doesn't see where he's going. He tumbles down a hill into a wooden fence. A man in dark trousers and blue shirt leans over the unconscious Marty, slaps his face gently, then straightens up.
Fetch some water, we got a hearse man here!
The young man, resembling Marty, is wearing a hat. He has reddish hair and a moustache.
Mom? Mom, is that you?
There, there, now. You've been asleep for nearly 6 hours now.
I had this horrible nightmare. I dreamed I was in a western. I was being chased by all these Indians and a bear.
Well, you're safe and sound here now at the McFly Farm.
McFly Farm? Ah!
Marty sits up in bed.
Oh, you're my... Who are you?
The name's McFly. Maggie McFly.
McFly? Maggie?
And that's Mrs. McFly, and don't you be forgetting the Mrs. And what might your name be, sir?
Well, it's Mc...
Marty touches the fringes on the shirt.
Eastwood? Clint. Clint Eastwood?
Well, you hit your head, Mr. Eastwood. Not too serious, but lucky for you, Seamus found you when he did.
Seamus?
Me husband. You'll be excusing me, Mr. Eastwood, while I tend to William.
William?
It's okay, Will. It's okay.
Marty follows Maggie into the next door room.
That's William?
Aye. William Sean McFly, the first of our family to be born in America.
Oh, it's okay, Will. This here is Mr. Clint Eastwood here. Visit him.
Sure, and he likes you, Mr. Eastwood.
Maggie!
Seamus comes in with a shotgun and rabbits.
I'm not one to pry into a man's personal affairs, but exactly how is it that you came to be way out here without a horse or boots or a hat?
Well, my horse broke down and a bear ate my boots, and I guess I just forgot my hat.
How could you forget a thing like your hat? Would you like some water?
Yeah.
Maggie pours the water into glasses. Marty picks up a glass and stares at its murky contents.
I'll tell you what I'll do, Mr. Eastwood. I'll help you find your blacksmith friend. You can stay the night in the barn. And tomorrow, I'll take you as far as the railroad tracks. You can follow him straight on into town.
Marty spits out a mouthful of pellets. Maggie, her back to them, crosses herself.
Thanks.
Seamus goes over to the baby. Seamus picks the baby up and sits beside Marty.
Barn comfortable. Never any complaints about it from the pigs.
Seamus, a word with you.
Aye.
Seamus hands William to Marty.
Will you hold him for a minute?
Seamus follows Maggie into the next room.
You're not after bringing a curse on this house, taking him in like that. He's such a strange young man.
Aye, but I've just got a feeling about him, Maggie. That looking after him's the right thing to do. That's important.
Hey, buddy.
Look how my Bobby takes to him. Little Will never takes to strangers. It's almost as if he's connected to us.
Hey, Will.
So you're my great-grandfather. First McFly born in America.
Marty raises William up. Morning. Marty stumbles along a railroad in his trainers, jeans and shirt and a bowler-type hat. He comes to a station on the edge of a town. The sign on the station roof reads Hill Valley. He strolls into the town of a few buildings and a corral. Traps and a stagecoach and people on horseback throw up dust as they move through the town. Marty sees a billboard advertising Honest Job Statler, Fine Horses. There's a bathhouse, a large tent affair, and a meat market with a butcher chopping something up on the porch. A banner spread across the dusty street reads, Hill Valley Festival, Dance, Food, Games, Saturday night, September the 5th. Proceeds to construct clock tower. Marty approaches saloon doors. His eyes are level with the lower part of their top. He pushes them open and strides into a bar. The bartender stops wiping a glass and looks up, as does a card player at a table.
Just breezed in the door. Why, I didn't know the circus was in town.
Must have got that shirt off on a dead Chinese.
Marty glances up at three girls on a balcony. A patron spits on the floor beside Marty, who glances down, then saunters to the bar. The bartender places his hands on the counter.
What'll it be, stranger?
I'll have, ice water.
Ice water?
Water? You want water, you better go dunk your head in the horse trough out there. In here, we pour whiskey.
The bartender pours a whiskey and spills some on the counter. Smoke rises from the spilt liquor. Marty flicks the glass.
Excuse me.
What?
I'm trying to find the blacksmith.
A mean-looking guy. Marty turns round.
I told you never to come in.
There are four guys at the door.
James McFly. You look like him, though. Especially wear a dog ugly hat.
Marty takes his hat off.
Hey, Barbara. What's your name, dude?
Mart. Eastwood. Clint Eastwood.
What kind of stupid name is that?
I'd say he's the run of the litter.
Hey, now, boys.
Would you take a look-see at these pearly whites? Hell, I ain't seen teeth look that straight more than store-bought.
Oh, take a gander at them moccasins. What kind of skins is them?
What's that writing mean?
Nikkei, what is that, some sort of engine talk or something?
The bartender brings whiskey.
Bartender. I'm looking for that no-good cheating blacksmith. You seen him?
No, sir, Mr. Tannen, I have not.
Tannen? You're Mad Dog Tannen.
The bartender and his clientele take cover. Marty looks around to see he's alone.
Mad Dog. I hate that name. I hate it. You hear? Nobody calls me Mad Dog. Especially not some dooted up, egg-sucking gutter trash.
Come on! Mad Dog shoots at the floor.
You can dance better!
Marty indulges in Michael Jackson moonwalking dance steps backwards across the floor. Mad Dog and his gang watch bemused. Woo! He jumps on a plank of wood and sends a spittoon hurtling towards Mad Dog. The contents splatter over Mad Dog. Mad Dog glares at Marty and raises his gun. Marty stumbles against a table. Marty jumps on the bar, swings from a chandelier and races out of the saloon. The gang follow. Marty collides with a cowboy on a horse. Marty's on foot, Mad Dog and his gang on horseback. Mad Dog whirls a lasso. The loop goes over Marty's head and Mad Dog tightens it round his waist, bringing Marty down. Mad Dog rides back through the town, dragging Marty behind him. The gang fires shots into the air. Marty is tossed around on the ground as Mad Dog turns a corner. Marty's dragged towards some timber. Mad Dog slows down and stops in front of a building being constructed.
We got ourselves a new courthouse! High time we had a hanging!
Marty struggles to his feet. Mad Dog tugs on the rope and one of the gang loops the rope around a hook on a pulley. They raise the hook as a man with a long coat and a big rifle with a telescopic sight approaches.
They'll shoot the fleas off a dog's back at 500 yards, Tannen! And it's pointed straight at your head!
It's Doc Brown. Mad Dog indicates for his man not to shoot, then rides forward.
You owe me money, blacksmith.
How do you figure?
My horse threw a shoe. And seeing as you was the one that done the shooting, I say that makes you responsible.
Well, since you never paid me for the job, I say that makes us even.
Wrong! See, I was on my horse when it threw the shoe and I got thrown off. And that caused me to bust a perfectly good bottle of fine Kentucky Red Eye. So the way I figure it, blacksmith, you owe me $5 for the whiskey and $75 for the horse.
That's $80.
Look, if your horse threw a shoe, bring him back and I'll reshoe him.
I done shot that horse!
Well, that's your problem, Tannen.
Wrong. That's yours. So from now on, you better be looking behind you when you walk, because one day you're going to get a bullet in your back.
Mad Dog and his gang about turn and ride off. Doc, having shot the rope, turns to Marty.
Marty, I gave you explicit instructions not to come here, but to go directly back to 1985.
I know, Doc, but I had to come.
But it's good to see you, Marty.
The two men hug, then stroll away.
Marty, you're gonna have to do something about those clothes. If you walk around town dressed like that, you're liable to get shot.
Or hanged.
What idiot dressed you in that outfit?
You did.
Doc studies the gravestone photo.
Doc, by Buford Tannen, over a matter of $80.
September 7th. That's this Monday. Now I wish I'd paid him off. And who's this beloved Clara? I don't know anyone named Clara.
I don't know, Doc. I thought maybe she was a girlfriend of yours.
Marty, my involvement in such a social relationship here in 1885 could result in a disruption of the space-time continuum. As a scientist, I can never take that risk. Certainly not after what we've already been through.
Emmett! Oh, Emmett!
Hubert! It's the mayor!
Excuse me, Emmett. Do you remember last week at the town meeting when you volunteered to meet the new school teacher at the station when she came in?
Oh, yes, quite so.
Well, we just got word she's coming in tomorrow. Here are the details for you. Thanks for all your help.
Anytime, Hubert!
Oh! Her name's Miss Clayton. Clara Clayton.
Doc, eyes wide and mouth open, gawps at Marty, who takes off the hat he's been trying on. Marty strides up to Doc.
Now we know who Clara is!
Marty, it's impossible. The idea that I can fall in love at first sight is romantic nonsense. There's no scientific rationale for that.
Come on, Doc, it's not science. You meet the right girl, it just hits you. It's like lightning.
Marty, please don't say that.
That's the way it was me and Jennifer. We couldn't keep our eyes off each other. God, Jennifer, damn, I hope she's all right, Doc. I can't believe we just left her there on the porch.
Don't worry, Marty, you'll be fine. When you burn the almanac in 1955, the normal timeline was restored. That means once we're back in 1985, you just have to go over the house and wake her up. Oh, Marty, turn that valve over there. All the way to the right. Yeah, put it all the way around.
Steam escapes from a vast wooden and metal contraption. Doc stands beside a tube and holds a pan under it. Using tweezers, Doc picks up something which dropped from the tube and places it in a container.
Iced tea?
No, thanks. It's a refrigerator.
Well, I guess Miss Clayton will have to find other transportation. If I never meet the woman, there's no possibility of a romantic infatuation, right?
You're the doc, Doc.
All right. Get the DeLorean and get ourselves back to the future.
Oh, listen, Doc, I tore a hole in the gas tank when I was landing, so we're gonna have to patch it up and get some gas.
You mean we're out of gas?
Yeah, it's no big deal. We got Mr. Fusion, right?
Mr. Fusion powers the time circuits and the flux capacitor, but the internal combustion engine runs on ordinary gasoline. It always has. There's not gonna be a gas station around here until sometime in the next century. And without gasoline,
We can't get the DeLorean up to 88 miles per hour.
So what do we do?
Out in the desert, a team of six horses pull the DeLorean, with Doc and Marty sitting on the car's roof.
24!
So use, Marty! Even the fastest horse in the world! Won't run more than 35, 40 miles an hour!
They leave a trail of dust in their wake. Later, in Doc's smithy, he uncorks a bottle.
The bartender says that's the strongest stuff they got.
Try it, Marty.
Doc pours it into the fuel tank. Doc looks excited. A burst of flames and a lot of smoke from the underside of the chassis. Doc picks up some debris.
It blew the fuel injection manifold. Strong stuff, all right. It'll take me a month to rebuild it.
A month? Doc, you're gonna get shot on Monday!
I know! I wish... Wait... I've got it! We can simply roll it down a steep hill. No, we never find a smooth enough surface. Unless, of course, ice. We'll wait until winter, when the lake freezes over.
Winter? Doc, what are you talking about? Monday, it's 3 days away!
All right. Just let's think this thing through logically. We know it won't run under its own power. We know we can't pull it. But if we could figure out a way to push it up to 88 miles an hour, huh?
Doc turns to the window and sees a steam train chug into Hill Valley Station. He swings round to Marty.
How fast did she go? Why, I've had her up to 55 myself. I hear that Fearless Frank Fargo got one of these up to near 70 out past 30 junction.
Well, you think it's possible to get it up to 90?
Ha! 90? Tarnation, son, who never needs to be in such a hurry?
Well, it's just a little bit he and I have, that's all. Theoretically speaking, could it be done?
Well, I suppose if you had a straight stretch of track with a level grade and you weren't hauling no cars behind you, and if you could get the fire hot enough, and I'm talking about hotter than the blazes of hell and damnation itself, then yes, it might be possible to get her up that fast.
Tell me, when's the next train come through here?
Monday morning at 8 o'clock.
Here! This spur that runs off the main line 3 miles out to Clayton Ravine is a long stretch of level track that will still exist in 1985. This is where we'll push the DeLorean with the locomotive. Funny. This map calls Clayton Ravine Shonash Ravine. That must be the old Indian name for it. It's perfect. A nice long run that goes clear across the bridge over the ravine. You know, over near that Hilldale housing development?
Right, Doc, but according to this map, there is no bridge.
Well, Doc, we can scratch that idea. I mean, we can't wait around a year and a half for this thing to get finished.
Marty, it's perfect. You're just not thinking fourth dimensionally.
Right, I have a real problem with that.
Don't you see? The bridge will exist in 1985. It's safe and still in use. Therefore, as long as we get the DeLorean up to 88 miles an hour before we hit the edge of the ravine, we'll instantaneously arrive at a point in time where the bridge is completed. We'll have track under us and coast safely across the ravine.
What about the locomotive?
It'll be a spectacular wreck. Too bad no one will be around to see it. Great Scott!
A woman in a two-horse-drawn buckboard struggles to control the animals. Doc and Marty chase after her. The buckboard horses gallop at full speed. Doc leads the pursuit as they gain on the runaways. The woman, wearing a pillbox hat, a dress with a slim waist and a bustle, keeps a tight hold on the reins, to no effect. The track they're on bends to the right and Doc catches up with the buckboard. Doc stretches out his hand. The woman leaps into his arms. The front wheel hits a rock, the horses break free, and the buckboard and its contents hurtle into the ravine. The woman's on Doc's horse.
Thank you, sir. You saved me.
She raises her straw hat and studies Why? Doc. They stare into each other's eyes. Doc doffs his hat.
Miss Brown, at your service, miss.
I'm Clayton. Clara Clayton.
Clara.
Marty whips out the photo of the gravestone.
Beautiful name.
With Clara on one of the two horses from the buckboard and her rescued clothes on the other, she, Doc and Marty ride up to a red building with a bell tower, the schoolhouse. She looks inside.
Are you inside with these?
Oh, no, that won't be necessary. I can take care of it. You've done more than enough already.
But it's really no trouble.
Doc, she says it's fine. We gotta get going.
Ma'am, good luck with your school teaching and everything.
Clara, I'll straighten everything out with Mr. Statler for the buckboard rental. Don't you worry about that. I feel somewhat responsible for what happened.
Well, that would be very gentlemanly of you, Mr. Brown. Emmett?
Doc grins and turns away.
I'm almost glad that snake spooked those horses. Otherwise, we might never have met. Suppose it was destiny.
Wide-eyed, Doc stares at her.
Thank you for everything.
You're quite welcome.
I will see you again, won't I?
Of course. You'll see lots of me, I'm sure. I have a shop in town. I'm the local scientist. A blacksmith.
Science? What sort of science? Astronomy? Chemistry?
Actually, I'm a student of all sciences.
Hey, Doc. You gotta get going.
Oh, yes. Well, excuse us, Claire. We have to get going.
He stumbles out of the picket fence gate, then closes it. She waves and smiles, keeping her eyes fixed on the white-haired Doc.
What do you mean you're going to be seeing lots of her, Doc?
Well, I might see her again just in passing.
Come on, Doc. You see the way she was looking at you?
She did have quite a scare, right? After all, Miss Clayton almost ended up at the bottom of Clayton Ravine. Clayton Ravine?
Holy, hey, Doc! Clayton Ravine was named after a teacher. They say she fell in there 100 years ago.
100 years ago? That's this year.
Every kid in school knows that story because we all have teachers we like to see fall into the ravine.
Great Scott! Then she was supposed to go over in that wagon. And now I may have seriously altered history.
Look, Doc. What's the worst that can happen, huh? So they don't name the ravine after her. Let's just get the DeLorean ready and get the hell out of here.
I wish I'd never invented that infernal time machine. It's caused nothing but disaster.
Doc, this is Marty.
Do you read me? Over.
Check, Marty.
Great, Doc. These things still work.
All right, Marty. Once more, let's go over the entire plan and layout. I apologize for the crudity of this model, but
yeah,
I just...
Yeah, no, Doc, it's not the scale. It's okay, Doc.
All right. Tomorrow night, Sunday, we'll load the DeLorean onto the tracks here on the spur, right by the old abandoned silver mine. The switch track is where the spur runs off the main line 3 miles out to Clayton Shonash Ravine. The train leaves the station at 8 Monday morning. We'll stop it here on a couple of cars from the tender, throw the switch track, and then we'll borrow the locomotive and use it to push the time machine. According to my calculations, we'll reach 88 miles per hour just before we hit the edge of the ravine, at which point we'll be instantaneously transported back to 1985 and coast safely across the completed bridge.
What does this mean? Point of no return.
That's our fail-safe point. Up until there, we still have enough time to stop the locomotive before it plunges into the ravine. But once we pass this windmill, it's the future or bust.
Doc tests pincers and a fork.
Here you go, Marty. Connect that to the positive terminal. All right, Marty, you all set?
Yeah, go.
Train pulling out of the station. Coming up to the switch track. Stop at the switch track. Throw switch. Pull up to the DeLorean. Pushing the DeLorean. Up to 88 miles per hour.
The model train pushes the toy DeLorean along the track and off the bridge. Doc catches it.
Couldn't be simpler.
Marty and Doc exchange a look.
It's Clara! Quick, cover the DeLorean!
They cover it with a tarpaulin as Clara opens the slatted wooden door and walks in.
Hello. Why, hello. This is quite a surprise.
Well, I hope I'm not disturbing anything.
Oh, no, we were just doing a little model railroad.
Oh. Emmett, when my bags were thrown from the wagon, my telescope was damaged. And since you mentioned an interest in science, I thought you might be able to repair it for me. I would pay you, of course.
No, no, no. I wouldn't think of charging you for this. Well, let's have a look at it.
I think a lens may be out of alignment because if you move it this way, the image turns fuzzy. See? But if you turn it...
She stands behind him.
Everything becomes...
Doc turns to face her. They move apart.
I'll prepare it right away and have it for you tonight.
Tonight's the town festival. I wouldn't dream of having you work on my telescope during such an important occasion. You are planning on attending, aren't you?
Oh.
Well, actually, ma'am, yes, I don't think...
Yes, of course, the festival.
Well, in that case, I'll see you this evening at the festival, Emmett. Mr. Eastwood?
Ma'am.
She strides to the door and turns.
Thank you for taking care of my telescope.
You're quite welcome.
She disappears from Doc's view. Marty walks up to the mesmerized Doc.
Ladies and gentlemen, as mayor of Hill Valley, it gives me great pleasure to dedicate this clock to the people of Hill County. Yeah. May it stand for all time. Tell me when, gentlemen. 3, 2, 1,
now! The mayor sets the pendulum going. The clock, still on the ground, shows 8 o'clock. Fireworks shoot out of the shell of the courthouse, onto which the clock is to be fitted. Marty watches with Doc.
Well, in a way, it's fitting that you and I are here to witness this.
It's too bad I didn't bring my camera.
A photographer with a camera on a tripod snaps the clock.
Ready, gentlemen?
The only problem is we'll never be able to show it to anybody.
Smile, Doc.
They're photographed in front of the clock at 8:10 p.m. A band on a makeshift stage encouraged the townsfolk to dance. The women are dressed in bonnets and dresses with bustles, the men in hats and jackets. Doc and Marty are watching.
It's got a beat and you can dance to it.
I brought up, gentlemen, to test your mettle with the latest product from Colonel Samuel Colt's Patent Firearms Manufacturing Company of Hartford, Connecticut. Now, take this model, for example. Renewed, improved, and refined Colt Peacemaker. Now, they can use tonight for the low.
Doc is enraptured when he spies Clara amongst the crowds. She seems to be looking for someone or something. Doc, who's wearing a tweed jacket and waistcoat and sporting a bow tie, moves towards her. She looks up and sees him. He smiles and she returns it. She steps up to join him on the dance floor. He bows.
Good evening.
Evening.
You look very nice.
Thank you.
She wears an ivory dress with a pinched-in waist, her long auburn hair uncovered. Clara fidgets with her hands and sways them to the music.
Would you care to...
I'd love to.
He proffers his arm. She links her arm in his and they walk to the center of the dance floor, then turn to face each other. They bow to each other. Then Doc takes her right hand in his left. He hesitates before placing his right hand on her back.
Young man, how about you? You want to give it a try?
No, thanks. Hey, Doc, this...
Marty turns his back on the Colt salesman and sees Doc and Clara on the dance floor.
Son! Funny boy!
The Doc can dance.
The salesman tries to attract Marty's attention.
Son!
Hey! I just told you that even a baby could handle this weapon. Surely you're not afraid to try something that a baby could do.
Hey, I'm not afraid of nothing.
Oh, come on, man. Let's just step up here like a baby. Now, young man. What you do is you just ease that hammer back there and squeeze off around.
No.
right on out there and be real smooth. That's the way you do it.
Marty misses badly.
Listen, can I try that again?
Yeah, go ahead.
Marty shifts the pistol into his right hand and fires off the remaining five rounds, each one finding its mark. He spins the empty gun around in his hand and gives it back to the astonished salesman.
Hey, just tell me one thing. Where'd you learn to shoot like this?
7-Eleven.
Mad Dog and his gang ride up by some cattle pens.
Are you sure that blacksmith's gonna beat this here shindig?
Sure he's here. Everybody's here tonight.
A man steps up to them.
You gentlemen will have to check your firearms if you want to join in on the festivities.
Who's gonna make us tenderfoot? You?
I am.
Another man with a shotgun.
Marshal Strickland, I didn't know you was back in town.
If you can't read the sign, Tannen, I presume you can read this.
Pretty tough armor when you're pointing a scattergun at a man's back.
Just like you, Tannen, I take every advantage I can get. Now, you gonna check your iron?
I was just joking with you, deputy. Of course I'm gonna check my iron. We all were, weren't we, boys?
Yeah, right!
Mad Dog hands over his gun.
After all, this is a party.
The only party I'll be smiling at is the one that sees you at the end of a rope.
Strickland gives Mad Dog a hard stare. As Mad Dog rides off, Strickland turns to a boy beside him.
That's how you handle him, son. Never give him an inch and maintain discipline at all times. Remember that word. Discipline.
I will, Pa.
Strickland pats his son. At a table near the hoedown, Seamus and Maggie come over to Marty.
Why, Mr. Eastwood, nice to see you. I see you got yourself some respectable clothes, lad. And a fine hat.
Yeah, well, a couple of people didn't like the way the other one looked on me.
Sure, and that one suits you, Mr. Eastwood. It's very Bukulman.
Oh, thanks. Hey, Frisbee, far out.
A Frisbee brand pie dish.
It was
right in front of him.
At the hoedown, Claire is still dancing with Doc.
Now down to the partner. You're through.
They bow to each other. Mad Dog and his men head for the saloon.
Give me that.
There he is, Buford.
Where?
There, dancing with that piece of calico.
What are you gonna do, boss?
Mad Dog removes his hat.
I bury this muzzle deep enough in his back, nobody will hear the shot.
Careful, Buford. You ain't got but one bullet with that.
I only need one.
He takes a tiny Derringer pistol from inside his hat and heads over to the hoedown. Doc and Clara are still dancing when Mad Dog steps up behind Doc and sticks the Derringer in his back.
You watch your back, Smithy.
Tannen, with your hurley.
It's a Derringer, Smithy. Small but effective. Last time I used it, fella took 2 whole days to die. Bled to death inside. It was real, real painful. That means you'll be dead by about supper time Monday.
Excuse me, I don't know who you think you are, but we're dancing.
Look you what we have here. Ain't you gonna introduce me to the lady? I'd like a dance.
I wouldn't give you that pleasure. You'll just have to go ahead and shoot.
All right.
No, Emmett, I'll dance with him.
Boy, get the blacksmith company while I get acquainted with the Billy!
You! Yeah!
I don't dance very well when my partner has a gun in his hand.
Oh, you learn. You learn. You know, Smithy, maybe I'll just take my $80 worth out of her.
That's it!
Woo! Yeah, I bet there's something you can do that's worth $80.
I believe you've underestimated me, mister.
What am I now?
She kicks him in the shin and he knocks her over.
Stop it! Damn you, Tannen!
No. I damn you. I damn you to hell!
Marty throws the pie dish at Mad Dog's gun hand. The shot blows Doc's hat off.
You.
Hey, lighten up, jerk!
Mad Dog looks at his men, who shrug.
Mighty strong words, Runt. You man enough to back him up with more than just a pie plate?
Marty looks uneasy.
Look, just leave my friends alone.
Oh, what's wrong, dude? You yell up!
Marty stops in his tracks and turns slowly to face Mad Dog.
That's what I thought. Yellow belly.
Marty walks slowly towards Mad Dog and his men.
Nobody calls me Yellow.
Let's finish it right now.
Not now, Buford. Marshall's got our guns.
Like I said, we'll finish this tomorrow.
Tomorrow we're robbing the Pan City stage.
What about Monday? We doing anything Monday?
No, Monday be fine. You can kill him on Monday.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
Noon. I do my killing before breakfast. 7 o'clock.
8 o'clock. I do my killing after breakfast.
Marty.
Marty looks over at Doc. Seamus and Maggie exchange a look.
All right, now break it up. What's all this about? You causing trouble here, Tannen?
No trouble, Marshal. Just a little personal matter between me and Eastwood. This don't concern the law.
Tonight, everything concerns the law. Now break it up. Any brawling, it's 15 days in the county jail. All right, folks, come on. This is a party. Come on, let's have some fun.
As the band strikes up, Mad Dog approaches Marty.
8 o'clock, Monday. If you ain't here, I'll hunt you and shoot you down like a duck.
Let's go, Buford. Shoot him down like a dog.
Let's go, boys! Let these sissies have their party!
Marty, what are you doing? Say you're gonna meet Tannen.
Hey, Doc, don't worry about it. Monday morning, 8 a.m., we're gonna be gone, right?
Theoretically, yes, but what if the train's late? We'll discuss this later.
We'll discuss it now, late.
Thank you for your gallantry, Mr.
No, hey.
Had you not interceded him, it might have been shot.
Marty, Clint, I'm going to take Clara home.
You right. Sure said me straight, Mr. Eastwood. I'm glad somebody finally got the gumption to stand up to that son of a bitch.
You're all right in my book, Mr. Eastwood. I'd like to buy you a drink.
Hey, listen, I don't want a drink. You have to buy me anything. It was no big deal.
I'd like for you to have this brand new Colt Peacemaker and gun belt. Free of charge.
Free?
I want everybody to know that the gun that shot Buford Tannen was a Colt Peacemaker.
Hey, no problem. Thanks a lot.
Of course, you understand that if you lose, I'm taking it back.
Marty stares after the salesman.
Thanks again.
Seamus and Maggie come over.
You hot up, Mr. Eastwood. You could have just walked away and nobody would have talked to Leslie for it.
All it would have been was words. Hot air from a buffoon. Instead, you let him roil you. Royal you into playing his game, his way, play his rules.
Seamus, relax. I know what I'm doing.
He reminds me of poor Martin.
Hi. Who?
Me brother.
Wait a minute. You have a brother named Martin McFly?
Had a brother.
Martin used to let men provoke him into fight. He was concerned that people would think him a coward if he refused. That's how he got a bowie knife shoved through his belly in a saloon in Virginia City. Never considered the future, poor Martin, God rest his soul.
Seamus goes.
And I hope you're considering the future, Mr. Eastwood.
Marty stares after Maggie as she goes.
I think about it all the time.
And that crater in the middle northwest, the one that's out there all by itself like a starburst? That one's called Copernicus. Listen to me, I feel like I'm teaching school.
No. Please, continue the lesson. I never found lunar geography so fascinating. You're quite knowledgeable.
When I was 11, I had diphtheria. I was quarantined for 3 months. So my father brought this telescope and he put it next to my bed so I could see everything out the window. Emma, do you think we'll ever be able to travel to the moon the way we travel across the country on trains?
Definitely. Although not for another 84 years and not on trains. We'll have space vehicles, capsules settle off with rockets, devices that create giant explosions. Explosions so powerful that they
break the pull of the Earth's gravity and send the projectile through outer space.
Doc looks surprised.
Yeah. I read that book, too. You're quoting Jules Verne, From the Earth to the Moon.
You've read Jules Verne.
I adore Jules Verne.
So do I. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, my absolute favorite. The first time I read that when I was a little boy, why I wanted to meet Captain Nemo.
Jeez, Emmy, you couldn't have read that when you were a little boy. It was only first published 10 years ago.
Oh, yes. Well, I meant it made me feel like a boy.
She nods.
I never met a woman who liked Jules Verne before.
I never ever
met a man like you before.
They stare into each other's eyes, then lean forward and exchange a lingering kiss. A shooting star scuds through the night sky above them. Next morning, a cuckoo clock strikes 7 and triggers one of Doc's contraptions, which makes breakfast. An egg rolls out of a hen's cage into a bowl, which cracks the shell and tips the egg into a frying pan. The pan is then drawn onto a griddle, which lights. Toast is pulled out of a toaster by a counterweight, and bacon flops out of a mangle into a second frying pan. Marty awakes on a cot nearby and gets out of bed, dressed only in his long johns.
Doc!
He looks over at Doc's bed, which is empty.
Doc! Hope you know what you're doing.
He sees his newly acquired Colt pistol and its gun belt on the table. He picks it up and looks at it. Later, still in his long johns, Marty wears the gun belt and his Stetson and practices his fast draw technique in front of the mirror. He aims his gun at his reflection.
You talking to me, Tannen?
He uncocks the gun and shrugs.
Well, I'm the only one here. Go ahead. Make my day.
Now up and dressed, Marty walks along a boardwalk in town with the gun belt on his waist.
Good morning, Mr. Eastwood.
Morning.
Have a cigar, Mr. Eastwood. Anything I can do for you today, Mr. Eastwood?
No, it's fine.
Good luck tomorrow, Mr. Eastwood. We'll be praying for you.
Thanks.
Good morning, Mr. Eastwood. Interest you in a new suit for tomorrow?
I'm fine. Thanks.
The tailor goes. Marty looks across the street and sees Doc sniffing a blue flower, which he puts in his buttonhole. Marty goes over to him.
Doc, what are you doing?
Oh, nothing. I'm just out enjoying the morning air. It's really lovely here in the morning, don't you think?
Yeah, it's lovely, Doc. Listen, we got to load the DeLorean up and get ready to roll, all right? Hey, look at that, the tombstone.
Marty, let me see that photo back here.
Marty hands him the photo.
My name, it's vanished.
Hey, that's great, Doc. Don't you get it? We're going back to the future tomorrow, so everything's being erased.
But only my name is erased. The tombstone itself and the date still remain. That doesn't make sense. We know that this photograph represents what will happen if the events of today continue to run their course into tomorrow.
Right, so.
Excuse me, Mr. Eastwood. I just need to take your measurement.
Oh, look, pal, I don't want to buy a suit.
No, this is for your coffin.
My coffin?
Well, the odds are running 2-1 against you. Might as well be prepared.
So, may not be my name that's supposed to end up on this tombstone. It may be yours.
Great Scott.
I know, this is heavy. Marty, why are you wearing that gun? You're not considering going up against Tannen tomorrow.
Doc, tomorrow morning I'm going back to the future with you. But if Buford Tannen comes looking for trouble, I'm going to be ready for him. You heard what they called me last night.
Marty, you can't go losing your judgment every time someone calls you a name. That's exactly what causes you to get into that accident in the future.
Marty looks round at Doc.
What about my future?
I can't tell you. It might make things worse.
Wait a minute, Doc. What is wrong with my future?
Marty, we all have to make decisions that affect the course of our lives. You've got to do what you've got to do. And I've got to do what I've got to do.
That night, Doc and Marty are working on the section of railway track they plan to run the DeLorean down to launch it back to the future.
Marty.
Yeah?
I've made a decision.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going with you tomorrow. I'm staying here.
Doc stares earnestly at a surprised-looking Marty.
What are you talking about, Doc?
There's no point in denying it. I'm in love with Clara.
Oh, man. Doc, we don't belong here. Neither one of us. You know, it could still be you that gets shot tomorrow. This tombstone could still be in your future.
Marty. The future isn't written. It can be changed, you know that. Anyone can make their future whatever they want it to be. I can't let this one little photograph determine my entire destiny. I have to live my life according to what I believe is right. In my heart.
Marty shrugs.
You're a scientist. So you tell me, what's the right thing to do up here?
Marty points at his head. Doc regards him solemnly and puts down the lantern he's holding, then looks at the photograph of the tombstone. He turns back to Marty.
You're right, Marty.
He hands the photo back to Marty, then reaches up and pulls a lever, releasing the DeLorean down onto the railway tracks. The vehicle coasts to a halt on the tracks. Doc and Marty look over at it.
Wow, that worked great.
I've at least got to tell her goodbye.
Come on, Doc. Think about it. What are you going to say to her? I got to go back to the future? I mean, she's not going to understand that, Doc. Hell, I'm in it with you and I don't even understand it.
Doc looks somber and steps towards the car.
Listen. Maybe we can just take Clara with us.
To the future?
He shakes his head and walks back to Marty.
As you reminded me, Marty, I'm a scientist, so I must be scientific about this. I caution you about disrupting the continuum for your own personal benefit. Therefore, I must do no less. We shall proceed as planned, and as soon as we return to 1985, we'll destroy this infernal machine. Traveling through time has become much too painful.
Doc walks away past Marty. Later, Marty lies asleep beside a campfire. Doc sits on the far side of the fire, staring thoughtfully at the buttonhole, which he now holds in his hand. He glances over at Marty, then looks over at Clara's house. Clara's working at her desk when Doc knocks at the front door. She looks round.
It's Emmett, Clara.
Emmett, won't you come in?
No, I better not.
What's wrong?
I've come to say goodbye.
Goodbye? Well, where are you going?
I'm going away. And well, I'm afraid I'll never see you again.
Emmett.
Clara, I want you to know that I care about you deeply. But I realize that I don't belong here, and I have to go back where I came from.
And where might that be?
I can't tell you.
Well, and wherever you go, and take me with you.
I can't, Clara. I wish it didn't have to be this way, but just believe me when I tell you that I'll never forget you, and that I love you.
I don't understand what you're trying to say.
Clara, I don't think there's any way that you can understand it.
Please, Emmett, please, I have to know. If you sincerely do love me, then tell me the truth.
All right, then. I'm from the future. I came here in a time machine that I invented, and tomorrow I have to go back to the year 1985.
She looks stunned, then nods.
Yes, Emmett. I do understand. I understand because you know I'm partial to the writings of Jules Verne. You concocted those mendacities in order to take advantage of me. Oh, I've heard some whoppers in my day, but the fact that you'd expect me to entertain a notion like that is so insulting and degrading. All you had to say is I don't love you and I don't want to see you anymore. That at least would have been respectful.
But that's not the truth.
Doc looks down somberly and takes the buttonhole out of his coat pocket. He sniffs it and lays it on the windowsill, then walks away. Inside, a distraught Clara throws herself on her bed. In town, a miserable-looking Doc wanders into the saloon. The bartender turns to him.
Emmett! What can I get you? The usual?
No, Chester. I'm going to need something a lot stronger than that tonight.
Sarsaparilla.
Whiskey, Chester.
Whiskey? Emmett, are you sure you know what happened to you on the 4th of July?
Whiskey.
Okay, I ain't your papa. Just don't want to see you do the wrong thing.
And you can leave the bottle.
It's a woman, right? I knew it. I have seen that look on a man's face a thousand times all across the country. Well, all I can tell you, friend, is you'll get over her.
No. Clara is one in a million. One in a billion. One in a Googleplex. The woman of my dreams, and I lost her for all time.
I can assure you, sir, there are other women. I have peddling this barbed wire all across the country has taught me one thing, certain. It's that you never know what the future might bring.
Well, the future. Oh, I can tell you about the future.
He nods matter-of-factly at the barbed wire salesman. It's daylight as Marty wakes up alone by the campfire. The DeLorean is on the railway track nearby.
I sleep. What time is it, Doc?
He sees Doc has gone.
Doc!
He sees Doc's horse is missing, then glances at the photo of the tombstone. It just says, "Here lies, died, and the date." Mad Dog rouses his men.
Wake up!
Get up! Let's go!
I got me a run to get.
Still early, boss. Your hurry.
I'm hungry.
And in the future, we don't need horses. We have motorized carriages called automobiles.
If everybody's got one of these auto horses, does anybody walk or run anymore?
Of course we run. But for recreation, for fun.
Run for fun? What the hell kind of fun is that?
Marty rides into town and goes into the livery stables.
Doc! Doc!
Not finding him, Marty dashes back out onto the street and heads off. Back in the saloon.
He has.
None. That's the first one. He hadn't touched it yet. He just likes to hold it.
Marty comes running into the saloon.
Doc! What are you doing?
I've lost her, Marty. There's nothing left for me here.
All right, that's why you gotta come back with me.
Where?
Back to the future!
Doc thinks it over, then nods.
Right, let's get going!
Ray.
Gentlemen, excuse me, but my friend and I have to catch a train.
Here's to you, blacksmith! And to the future.
Amen.
Amen!
Helmet, no!
Doc knocks back his glass of whiskey and promptly keels over like a falling stone pillar, knocking over a table as he goes down. Marty rushes over to him.
Come on, Doc. Wake up. Wake up, Doc. How many do you have?
Just the one.
Just the one? Come on, Doc.
There's a fella that can't hold his liquor.
Give me some coffee. Black.
Joey, coffee!
Marty sees it's 7:45. Mad Dog and his men ride towards town. Claire is at the station.
How far does the 8 o'clock train go?
San Francisco is the end of the line.
I'll take a one-way ticket.
In the saloon...
You want to sober him up in a hurry, son. You're going to have to use something a lot stronger than coffee.
Yeah, what do you suggest?
Joey! Let's make some wake-up juice.
A selection of bottles are put on the bar top. Chester mixes their noxious-looking contents into a cocktail.
In about 10 minutes, he's gonna be as sober as a priest on Sunday.
10 minutes? Why do we have to cut these things so damn close?
Here, stick this clothespin on his nose. And when he opens up his mouth, go ahead and pour it on down his gullet. Oh, and stand back.
A funnel is stuffed into Doc's mouth, and Marty pours the concoction down it. Doc's eyes open and he comes running out of the saloon clutching his throat. He dashes over to a water trough and sticks his head into it. Marty and Chester pull him up.
Still out!
All right.
That was just a reflex action. Oh, it's going to take a few more minutes for the stuff to really clear up his head. Perfect.
They drag him back into the saloon. The 8 o'clock train pulls into the station. Clara is waiting on the platform with her bags. She's dressed in a smart purple outfit with matching hat. Seamus walks into the saloon where Chester and Marty stand over the dock.
Come on, Doc. Come on, wake up, buddy. Wake up, Doc. Come on. Come on.
Seamus! Wouldn't expect to see you here this morning.
Hey. Well, something inside me told me I should be here. As if my future had something to do with it.
Marty looks keenly at Seamus.
Come on, Doc. Let's go, Doc. Let's wake up now, buddy. Come on.
The saloon patrons watch through the windows as Mad Dog and his gang ride into town and dismount.
You're the nearest one!
Marty checks the clock.
8 o'clock! And I'm calling you out!
The clock reads 5 to 8. Marty crosses to the window.
It's not 8 o'clock yet!
It is by my watch! Let's settle this once and for all, run! All right, you got the gumption!
Marty takes the photo of Doc's grave out. Clint Eastwood is written on the gravestone. Marty's eyes widen as he looks at Seamus.
Listen!
He puts the photo away.
I'm not really feeling up to this today. So I'm gonna have to forfeit.
Forfeit? What's that mean?
It means that you win without a fight.
Without shooting? You can't do that! Hey, you can't do that! You know what I think? I think you ain't nothing but a gutless yellow turd. And I'm giving you to the count of 10 to come out here and prove I'm wrong. One.
Doc, come on, sober up, buddy. Let's go.
Two.
Come on.
You better get out there, son. I got $20 gold bet on you, so don't let me down.
Three.
I got $30 gold bet against you, so don't let me down.
Four.
You better face up to it, son, because if you don't go out there...
What?
Five!
What if I don't go out there? You're a coward.
Six!
And you'll be branded a coward for the rest of your days. Everybody, everywhere, will say Clint Eastwood is the biggest yellow belly in the West.
Outside, Mad Dog's confused. A gang member holds up 7 fingers.
Seven. Here.
A man slides a pistol along the bar. Marty takes the pistol and fingers it, a poncho over his shoulders. Marty looks up at Seamus from underneath his wide-brimmed hat. Seamus's eyes narrow. Saloon patrons stare at Marty anxiously. Marty turns his head slowly to look at Mad Dog through the window.
Don't hear me wrong! I said that's 10, you gutless yellow pie slinger!
Marty looks at Seamus, who nods nervously.
I don't care what Tannen says, and I don't care what anybody else says either.
Doc wakes.
Doc, you okay?
I think so. Whoa, what a headache.
Listen, you got a back door to this place?
Yeah, it's in the back.
Let's go, Doc.
Are you coming out here, or do I have to come in there after you?
A side alley.
Here is Tylenol.
Hey!
Mad Dog's gang spot them. They split up. Doc puts his hands up from behind a barrel. Marty's in a building by a broken iron stove. The train's wheels start to turn. Claire is on the train looking sad as it pulls away from Hill Valley Station. 2 passengers behind her.
That poor fella last night had the worst case of broken heart I have ever seen. When he said he didn't know how he could live the rest of his life, knowing how much hurt he caused that little girl. Well, I really felt it. I did, right here.
Mad Dog's gang haul Doc into the street. Marty's at a window.
Eastwood, I aim to shoot somebody today, and I'd prefer it to be you. But if you're just too damn yellow, I guess it'll just have to be a blacksmith friend. Forget about me, Marty, and save yourself!
Mad Dog loads his pistol, then consults Doc's pocket watch.
You've got 1 minute to decide. You hear me, Ron? 1 minute!
Marty looks exhausted on the train.
I've never seen a man so broken up over a woman. What did you say her name was? Kara? Sarah?
Clara.
Clara.
Clara spins around to face them.
Excuse me.
Ma'am?
But was this man tall, with great big brown puppy dog eyes and long silvery flowing hair?
You know him.
She spins back around and sighs. Clara leaps up and pulls the emergency cord. The passengers in the carriage lurch forward as the train stops. Clara jumps off the train and runs away. Mad Dog's gang with Doc.
Time's up, run!
Mad Dog lobs the watch at Doc and pulls out his pistol, aiming for Doc's head.
Here to meet your makeup, Lexman.
Right here, Tannen!
Marty strides out into the street. Mad Dog looks incredulous. Seamus is amongst the onlookers. Mad Dog backs up, spinning his pistol into its holster as the gang drag Doc out of the street. Marty and Mad Dog face each other at either end of the street. Marty's fingers flinch over his holstered pistol. Mad Dog gawps open-mouthed. Marty's eyes narrow. Mad Dog's flanked by a large crowd. Doc and Mad Dog's gang look at Marty. They look back at Mad Dog. Seamus looks uncomfortable as Marty loosens his gun belt. He takes it off and drops it. Mad Dog looks amazed. Marty swallows awkwardly.
I thought we could settle this like men!
Mad Dog squints. Mad Dog draws and shoots Marty, who crashes to the ground. Doc looks stunned, Seamus mortified. Mad Dog beams and struts towards the fallen Marty, bowing to the encroaching crowd. Seamus turns to walk away. Marty lies spread-eagled on the floor, his eyes closed. Mad Dog stands over him and brandishes his pistol. Marty's leg lashes out and kicks Mad Dog's gun away. Mad Dog's punch leaves him clutching his hand in agony. Marty smiles and removes his poncho, revealing the iron stove door. Mad Dog charges Marty, who hits him with the door and then dumps it. He punches Mad Dog's face. A third hit sends Mad Dog flying. Punch drunk, Mad Dog crashes into a gravestone that breaks. Carved into it, the words, "Here lies." He gets to his feet groggily. Marty delivers the knockout blow. Mad Dog spins and lands headfirst in a barrow full of horse manure.
That's good.
Four deputies ride in.
I think Buford's going to jail.
Mad Dog's gang run away, but Doc trips one of them over. Two deputies ride after the gang. Mad Dog gets up, covered in manure.
Buford Tannen, you're under arrest for robbing the Pine City stage. You got anything to say?
He spits out a mouthful of filthy green manure and glowers.
I hate manure.
Look!
Doc points at the gravestone. On the photo, it disappears.
The train! Can we make it?
We'll have to cut him off at Coyote Pass.
Doc and Marty saddle up.
Mister! Mr. Eastwood! Here's your gun, mister!
Thanks, kid.
Marty spots Seamus, who makes a fighting gesture and smiles. He throws the gun.
$12, never been used. Maybe I'll trade it for a new hat. Ride and take care of that baby! I will!
Seamus waves as Marty and Doc ride out of town. Clara arrives, out of breath. She enters Doc's workshop.
Emmett!
She looks at the model on Doc's table.
Time machine.
She picks up the model car with Time Machine written on it. Other parts are signposted Silver Mine and Start Here. Doc and Marty chase the train on horseback. They take to the tracks behind the train. docked in front of Marty as they urge their horses to gallop faster and catch up with the train. Doc reaches out an arm. He grasps for the ladder on the back of the train, then leaps onto the small platform. He reaches out as Marty rides up. Marty grabs Doc's arm and they scramble onto the train, landing in a heap. Marty gets to his feet and looks around. Clara rides out of Doc's workshop at high speed. The train powers its way along the tracks. Doc and Marty run along the roofs of the carriages. Behind Doc, Marty leaps a gap. Doc jumps down onto some chained up tree trunks. The two men make their way gingerly along the tree trunks. They reach the next carriage. They pull their handkerchiefs over their faces. They clamber over an open carriage full of chopped wood, heading for the engine car. Doc points his gun at the driver.
Rage! Is this a hold-up?
Doc looks at Marty.
Experiment! Stop the train just before you hit the switch track up ahead!
The train draws to a halt, smoke billowing from its funnel. Marty leaps out and operates a green lever to change the points.
Doc! Uncouple the cars for the tender!
Doc points his pistol at the driver and an engineer who follow his instructions. The engine uncouples from the rest of the train and Marty leaps on board. The engine chugs away in a new direction, leaving the other carriages behind. Doc pulls on a rope as he drives.
I wanted to do that all my life!
Further ahead, the DeLorean time machine sits on the track, connected by its wheels, which have been stripped of their tires. The engine approaches around a bend in the track, lined with green trees. Thick black smoke shoots out of its funnel. The huge engine comes to rest just inches away from the DeLorean. Marty grabs three numbered bundles from the car.
What are these things, anyway?
My own version of Pestilox. Pressed wood with anthracite dust, chemically treated to burn hotter and longer. I use them in my forge so I don't have to stoke it. These three in the furnace will ignite sequentially, make the fire burn hotter, kick up the boiler pressure, and make the train go faster.
Clara rides down a hillside and sees the train's abandoned carriages. She looks alarmed. Yeah. She rides on. Marty shuts the DeLorean door while Doc drives the train. The front of the train, reinforced with tires, bumps the DeLorean. Both vehicles start to move, steam hissing out from between the train's wheels. Doc leans out of the engine as they pick up speed. Marty looks around anxiously. Behind them, Clara rides through the trees and past the abandoned silver mine. The train and DeLorean speed forward. Doc has a walkie-talkie.
Are the time checkers on?
Check, Doc!
Input the destination time! October 27th, 1985, 11 a.m.
Check! Okay, we're cruising at a steady 25 miles an hour, Doc!
I'm throwing in the pistol log!
Doc throws the numbered bundles into the engine's furnace. Claire is catching up with the train.
Marty, the new gauge on the dashboard will tell us the boiler temperature. It's color-coded to indicate when each log will fire. Green, yellow, and red. Each detonation will be accompanied by a sudden burst of acceleration.
Claire is gaining.
88 miles per hour before the needle gets much past 2,000.
Why? What happens after it hits 2,000?
The whole boiler explodes.
Perfect.
Clara reaches out and grabs a ladder. An explosion from the train's funnel sparks a burst of speed. Gripping the ladder, Clara flies along behind them.
Hey, Doc, we just hit 35!
Okay, Marty, I'm coming aboard!
Doc takes off his hat as the train hares along the tracks. Clara pulls herself up at the back of the wood tender. Doc looks confused for a moment. Clara climbs across the wood pile as Doc edges along the engine towards the DeLorean. Green smoke pours from the engine's funnel as Marty checks a gauge.
Hold on to something, Doc! The yellow light's about to blow!
Clara's knocked over. A digital speedometer counts upwards past 40. Clara continues to clamber over the wood pile while Doc cautiously edges along a narrow platform at the side of the engine. Yellow smoke pumps out of the funnel. Clara reaches the driver's cabin. Doc's hair and coat flap around him as he reaches the front of the train. Doc's eyes widen as he looks down at the gap between the train and DeLorean. The car door opens.
45, Doc, go for it!
Doc looks terrified as he grips the engine and looks at the gap in front of him. Clara looks around the cabin. Marty watches the speedometer. Doc's about to let go. Doc looks confused, then leans out to check the cabin. Clara waves. Doc beams.
Doc, what's happening?
It's Clara! She's on the train!
Clara! Perfect.
She's in the cab! I've got to go back for her!
The windmill! Doc! The windmill! We're going past 50! You'll never make it!
They pass the windmill.
Come back with us! Keep calling out to speed! Clara! Climb out here to me!
I don't know if I can!
You can do it! Just don't look down!
Clara looks down at the train's pumping wheels. Clara grips the roof of the cabin and pulls her legs over the windowsill. She touches the narrow ledge running along the engine with the toes of her boots. In the DeLorean, the speedo approaches 60.
60 miles an hour, Doc!
The power gauge creeps upwards. They edge towards each other.
Just a little harder!
I can't, I'm
gonna
have to get it!
The speedo reads 70.
Keep coming, Clara! Come on! Come on, you're doing fine! Come on! Nice and easy! Don't look down! That's it, you're doing fine!
The power gauge hits danger. The funnel explodes, sending Clara and Doc flying. Doc grips a railing. Clara's dress catches. Clara's dress rips as the train rockets forward. The DeLorean rears up on its back wheels. Clara flails just inches from the ground. The furnace door blasts open. Rivets fly off the engine, venting steam. Marty sees the hoverboard.
Look at the hoverboard!
Marty holds the hoverboard out as the digital speedo hits 80. Doc gapes at an oncoming sign. Marty ducks into the car as the DeLorean smashes into the sign. Marty wields the hoverboard. Doc nearly loses his grip.
Ready, Doc! Get it! Yes! Yes!
Marty releases the hoverboard. Doc catches it by the strap with his foot. He turns around as the train approaches the ravine and a large sign reading, End of Track.
Hold on!
Clara's dress rips. She falls, but Doc catches her. Doc holds Clara in his arms. They smile at each other as they float away on the hoverboard. From the DeLorean, Marty watches them go. Marty sees the end of the track approaching. He ducks inside and shuts the door. Sparks appear around the car. The car is engulfed by lightning. The end of track sign rears up. A digital readout, October 27th, 1985. The DeLorean disappears in a ball of fire, leaving two burning lines in the air. The train smashes through the sign and plunges into the ravine, flames spitting from its mangled funnel. The wreck causes a series of explosions that shoot high into the air as the area is engulfed by smoke. The smoke clears. A modern red railway bridge spans the ravine. The DeLorean shoots out of a blue fireball and drifts along the railway tracks towards a railway crossing. A sign reads, Eastwood Ravine. Marty rubs his eyes as he passes a sign for Hilldale. As the DeLorean glides through the crossing, people waiting in cars on either side lean out of their windows. Marty smirks and looks embarrassed. The car comes to a stop. Marty's pensive. A train rockets towards him. He leaps out. The train plows into the car, smashing it to pieces. From a grass verge, Marty watches the freighter zoom past. The DeLorean's components are scattered across the tracks. Still dressed in his poncho and hat, Marty approaches the wreckage of his and Doc's time machine. He steps over the car parts and assorted debris. One of the DeLorean's doors lies at the side of the track. Next to it lies the digital readout and flux capacitor. He looks down at them. He looks up and stares back down the tracks.
It's destroyed. Just like you wanted.
Later, Marty runs up to Lion Estates. He passes between two concrete lions and jogs up to his parents' house. Two electricity pylons stretch up to the sky behind it. He heads for the garage.
Hey, Butthead, get away! Watch it, Biff! Marty! I didn't mean to scare you! I didn't recognize you in those clothes!
What the hell are you doing?
Just putting on the second coat now!
Biff scurries away.
Come on, guys! We're gonna be late for brunch!
Come on, Dad! We're not gonna hold your reservations all day!
I can find my other glasses! Oh, Lorraine, have you seen my glasses?
Turn your suede jacket, honey. Marty, what's wrong? We thought you went to the lake.
You wore that to the lake?
Thank God, you guys are all back to normal.
Hey, Marty, who are you supposed to be? Clint Eastwood?
Right. I gotta go get Jennifer.
Biff opens the door of the Jeep for Marty.
I really like that hat, Marty! Thanks, Biff.
Marty pulls up outside a clapboard house. He gets out and sees a young woman sleeping on the porch swing. He approaches her slowly. He touches her hand. He sits down on the swing and gently holds her. Marty tenderly rubs her on the cheek. He takes off his hat and looks wistful before leaning in towards her face. He hesitates momentarily before kissing Jennifer on the lips. She wakes.
Marty!
She hugs him.
Worst nightmare.
They drive along the road in Marty's shiny black pickup.
Marty, that dream I had is so real. About the future. About us. And you got fired.
Wait a minute, what do you mean I got fired?
A sign.
Hilldale. This is where we live. I mean, this is where we're gonna live. Someday.
Jennifer turns to Marty.
It was a dream, wasn't it?
A red truck pulls up.
The Big Ten. How's it hanging, McFly?
Hey, Needles.
Nice set of wheels. Let's see what she can do. Next green light.
No thanks.
What's the matter? Chicken?
Marty's face hardens. He puts his pickup into gear.
Grab hold of something.
Come on! Get on!
Needles revs up and punches the air. Needles' truck shudders forward slightly as the lights start to change. The lights go green and Needles shoots off. Marty reverses and spins around.
Did you do that on purpose?
Yeah, you think I'm stupid enough to race at it?
A Rolls-Royce pulls out in front of Needles, who swerves.
I would have hit that Rolls-Royce.
Jennifer looks astonished and turns around. She produces a piece of paper with "You're fired" printed on it in big letters, which promptly disappear. Raised. Later, Marty and Jennifer walk hand in hand towards the wreckage of the DeLorean by the railroad crossing. Jennifer clutches the piece of paper.
Left.
Marty frowns.
Doc's never coming back.
He reaches down to pick up a torn photograph from the ground. He shakes some dirt off and they both observe the sepia picture of Doc standing by the clock.
I'm sure gonna miss him, Jen.
The crossing gates fall. Marty and Jennifer look up and down the tracks. Marty and Jennifer are blown off their feet and onto the grass verge as a huge black steam engine appears in a burst of bright light. Doc leans out.
Marty!
Doc! Doc!
Marty! It runs on steam!
The door to the train folds open and becomes steps. Claire is inside.
Clara, you know.
Hi, Marty!
Ma'am! These are our boys! Jules! And Vern!
Marty beams. The dog's there too.
This is Marty and Jennifer.
Jennifer waves at the boys.
Doc, I thought I'd never see you again!
You can't keep a good tie this down! After all, I had to come back from Einstein. Well, I didn't want you to be worried about me. Oh! I brought you a little souvenir.
Doc sits on the steps. Marty approaches, takes the package, and unwraps it. It's the complete framed picture of Marty and Doc by the Hill Valley clock.
It's great, Doc! Thanks!
They shake hands.
I brought this note back from the future, and now it's a race!
Of course it's a race!
But what does that mean?
It means your future hasn't been written yet. No one's has. Your future is whatever you make it. So make it a good one. Both of you.
Marty and Jennifer embrace.
Stand back! All right, boys, buckle up!
The doors fold shut. Doc sticks his head out of the window.
Hey, Doc! Where are you going now? Back to the future?
Nope. Already been there.
Doc waves at the pair and they both wave back. He leans in and slides the window shut. The train's wheels fold up underneath it and the elaborate machine floats into the air on thin jets of fire. Blue lights whiz along the side of the engine as it turns in the sky. Two huge boosters light up and the time-traveling steam train rockets away. The end. ITFC audio description.